Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Ray Rising, on being kidnapped for more than 2 years as a missionary.
Never lost hope. But my faith grew a lot during that time, of course. And since I had the scriptures in my language, the Lord spoke to me, after a while, they gave me a little radio, and I was able to get some programs from HCJB in Ecuador in English, especially Sunday afternoons. And it was a great blessing to me to hear different Christian programs on the radio. So,
Ray Rising, next. When sensing God's call to missionary service overseas, adjusting to a new culture and language are expected challenges. What's not expected is being kidnapped. Unfortunately, this does happen from time to time, such as in well-known cases like that of Gloria and Martin Burnham in the Philippines in 2001, or those 17 missionaries in Haiti in 2021, and going back to 1994, long-term Wycliffe missionary Ray Rising was kidnapped and held for more than 800 days in Colombia. Ray is our guest today. He tells of his ordeal in the book, Guerrilla Hostage. Ray, tell us what you were doing in Colombia and how long you'd been in that country.
We went to Colombia in 1966. Young people in our early 20s. And in 1977, we moved to Ecuador. We were there for 4.5 years. And in 1983, we went back to Colombia. And I was there until I was kidnapped. And my assignment there was working in radio communications, local security, and local public relations. And of course, I liked the local public relations the best. So that's what I was doing.
Tell us about the circumstances of your kidnapping back in 1994. Why were you taken, and how did it happen?
On March 31st, 1994, I was in Puerto Yeres, Colombia. It's a little town about 4 kilometers from our center. We had a translation center there called Loma Linda. There was about 150, 200 North Americans working there doing translation work, about 38 to 40 different languages in the country. And that was our center of operation. And that particular day, I had been in Puerto Yeres visiting families and giving kids rides on my motorcycle. And about 6 o'clock, it was starting to get dark. In Colombia, you've got about 10 minutes of dusk, and that is very dark. So I was on my way home in a hurry down this gravel road on my motorcycle. As I approached the back gate to the property, this is about 2 kilometers from our house, I stopped to open the gate. A young man walked to the gate just in front of me, pulled out a gun and aimed it at me. Just then, two other young men ran from behind me, also pointed their guns at my head. And it was silence. And I said, I don't have much money. And they said, get off and come with us. So I got off and I said, let's go. And we ran. They had some small dugout canoes hidden nearby, and we went across the stream, and then we ran and ran and ran through a rice field. And I was getting tired, getting a side ache, so I put my head down to catch my breath. And when I'm pointing this gun at me, he says, you got me, or I'm going to shoot you. Well, you don't understand. I've got a heart problem. Actually, I didn't have a heart problem. I knew I had to get him slowed down. So, then we came out to a road. After they got me a horse, we came out to a road, and we sat there and waited with, I sat there and waited with one of them. And pretty soon some lights appeared coming up the road in a motorcycle, and they stopped and took me up there and put a blindfold on me, and off we went. So we traveled most of the night. I could hear the mud splashing up under the car. Probably came to the end of the road on the edge of the jungle. And then the next morning on April 1st, 1994, I was turned over to some armed guerrilla soldiers in camouflage uniforms and went with them. April 1st, 1994.
So you were taken essentially for ransom.
You have to understand that I was very well known in the area because of my involvement in a lot of civic activities. And it's hard to subvert people if there's somebody in the way. So they never told me why they kidnapped me, but one of them said, "You had a lot of influence here." And they were looking for me because somebody else came to that gate about 45 minutes before I did. And they were three guys there and let them through. So I was the target at that point.
So you were never actually told that you were taken for ransom, but you were kept for 810 days. Can you give us a little bit of an idea of what that was like from day to day?
I was always out in the woods, a tropical forest or a jungle, the first month it was actually jungle. The vegetation is different, the trees are different, a lot of wet and bugs and snakes and whatever. About the end of April 1994, the military showed up and started shooting next to where we were camped. And so about 10:30 at night, they said, we have to leave here. And so they told me to lay down on the bottom of the canoe, don't make any sounds, and off we went. And then I was with them. My shelter was a bed made out of sticks stuck in the ground for a mattress with some palm leaves. And I had a mosquito net and a sheet of black plastic for a roof. That's called a coleta in Spanish. And that was my home for the next 810 days. So I kind of developed a routine. The first week, they asked me what I wanted, like a toothbrush, toothpaste, shavers, deodorant, things like that. And I made a list and I put New Testament. Mm. So they got me all of the above, including the New Testament. Mm. I opened up the front cover of the New Testament and then said Alliance Church, Granada, Meta. So they had been to a church and got this New Testament for me. It was in Spanish with some selected Psalms in the back. I studied that every morning. And then in July of 1994, my family was able to get me a little NIV New Testament and in my language, English. So the part of my routine during the day was to study that in the morning. I read through the book of Acts several times. And then in the afternoon, I would exercise. And I actually got up to about 130 push-ups and ran around inside the camp and tried to stay physically fit as best I could. Dialogued once in a while with them. The first 4 months were very difficult because the commander wouldn't let them talk to me. And the Lord saw me struggling with that, because I wanted to talk to them and, sure, and share my life and the Lord with them. And so on my birthday, August 2nd, 1994, a replacement commander came into the camp. He walked right over to me and he said, "How are they treating you? How's the food?" I said, "Well, they won't let me talk to anybody." He said, "Joey, that's all right. That's all changed now. You can talk to anybody you want." So I said, "Thank you, Lord, for the birthday present." Mm,
yes.
And the Lord was with me and helped me and spoke to me through his word. And it was kind of actually a holy experience.
So you were able to communicate with your family at some point. Not right away, but...
It was several months before they even had any communication from the guerrillas. I think it was like 6 to 7 months. Mm. So, but they suspected who had me. And... I wrote 68 letters to my wife, and she received 5 of them. Whenever it was convenient to send out a proof of life, they'd send out a letter. So other than that, I didn't hear from them, except a miracle happened on Christmas in 1995. And at that time, they wouldn't let me listen to a radio because they thought I'd hear something about myself.
Sure.
But the gorilla that had his Coletta next to mine had a radio on, listening to a local station on shortwave. Turned it up loud. He went to go someplace. And all of a sudden, I heard somebody speaking English. So I ran over there to listen. And it was my wife. And she was giving me a message in English and saying that they're praying for me and appealed for my liberation. I said, "Lord, thank you for the Christmas present," December 24th. And that was a great blessing.
Well, my guest today on His People is Mr. Ray Rising. He served for many years with Wycliffe Bible Translators. He's giving us some insight into what he went through when he was kidnapped back in 1994. He was kidnapped in Colombia and held for 810 days. Ray, what kind of relationship did you have once you were able to talk with them, with your captors? In other words, was it friendly? Was it distant? Were you able to talk about spiritual things?
Probably all the above. I had good communications, especially with the younger ones. Most of them, or say half of them, were between the ages of 14 and 20. Mm. Now, I was with a group of about 6 to 8, and they changed them off every once in a while. Maybe after 2 or 3 months, they'd send somebody else. And then there was times when I was with the same one for a whole year. So the Lord reminded me, "Lord Ray, you're a missionary. You have to do what I want you to do, and you're here to do good as I've sent you." So I gave haircuts, I gave injections, prayed with the sick. And so I was kind of like a daddy to a bunch of young people. Now, remember, this is a special mission I didn't ask to have. It wasn't part of my job description. But the Lord had a purpose in it, and I realized that. And so some of them were friendly to me. And at one point, there were 3 or 4 guys that were trying to give me a problem. And I complained about it, and I got rid of them. They replaced them. Lord takes care of us in bad situations.
So you would say you were treated, considering you were kidnapped, you were treated fairly well.
I was, because of my involvement in the local community. Actually, there was a Catholic priest that was a friend of mine, and in the local town, we had worked sort of together to help poor people in the town. And so right after I was kidnapped, he took it upon himself to go over and talk to the gorillas, and he told them, "What you've done is not pleasing to God nor man." And so they said, "Well, we'll take good care of him." So they had orders to take care of me, and I always describe it as adequate, not real good, not real bad. But the worst thing with the insects and, you know, living out there in the bush. But I was not unaccustomed to that, because I'd had jungle experiences before with indigenous people in Ecuador.
So. Now, how long had you been in Colombia when you were kidnapped, Ray, in 1994? How long had you been serving?
We had been there a total of 20 years, but not continually. Like I mentioned, we were 4.5 years in Ecuador. Mm-hmm. But the first time we were there, 11 years, and then it was about 9 or 10 years after we came back in 1983. So that's why I say I was well known in the local area.
Was kidnapping something that was fairly common in that locale? In other words, was that something that you and the other missionaries were aware was possible?
Yeah, there were some other missionaries that were kidnapped about 70 miles away. They had a camp up in the mountains, and the gorillas went in and took 2 of them. And that happened about 6 weeks before I was taken. It was a business, not to kidnap missionaries, but to kidnap people of resources. So sometime after I was released, and a few years later, they admitted it was a mistake.
Can you talk about how the Lord sustained you, Ray, during these 810 days? And did you ever lose hope that you would ever be released?
Never lost hope. But my faith grew a lot during that time, of course. And since I had the scriptures in my language, the Lord spoke to me and and I had, after a while, they gave me a little radio, and I was able to get some programs from HCJB in Ecuador in English, especially Sunday afternoons. And that was a great blessing to me to hear different Christian programs on the radio. So I never felt alone. And every time I needed to know something, the Lord showed me.
Did you sense that any of those young men that were your captors were open to the gospel, to the Lord, to hearing the story of Jesus?
Most of them were very poorly educated. One of them I befriended had about 1 year of schooling, and I realized that, and how was I going to communicate it best? So actually, I made a drawing. It's called a bridge illustration. It shows a plan of salvation with God on one side, as you can best describe it, and on the other side of the bridge is people that need to know the Lord, and the bridge is the cross of Jesus, and written above it, I wrote John 5:24, he that heareth my word and believeth on me hath passed from death to life. So they had some colored pencils, and I drew that out on a full 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And pasted it on the front of my shelter. So when they came by, I had a chance to show that. But you understand that they were all brainwashed into that communist hate system. So
when and how were you eventually released?
Well, there were negotiations going on for me, and we had a crisis committee set up. I don't know all of the details, but they were in contact with the guerrillas, and that kept me alive. And then there was a third-party family, not with the mission. I knew them for many, many years. And they got involved, and their son had been kidnapped back in 1985, and their other son negotiated for him. And at that time, their commander was a man called John. John happened to be just temporarily in charge of the unit that was holding me. So all friendship, all business in Colombia is done mainly through friendships. Mm. The son of this family had negotiated for his brother, was also able to negotiate for me. So the Lord put the right people in the right place at the right time. And what happened was after 2 years or so, the guerrillas were anxious to resolve this. So this family paid for my expenses and the expenses of people that were holding me, and came to an agreement that they let me go.
Was it fair to call that a ransom or not exactly?
Well, how much is a ransom? You know, if you're going to save somebody else's life. But the mission didn't pay for the ransom, and it's not a good idea for missions to pay for the ransom. In the long term, it's not a really good idea. The payment of ransom perpetuates a hostage taking, and in the long run, is not a good idea. However, agencies should be willing to negotiate with the captors in order to try and find a way to agree on the release of the captive. So negotiations need to happen.
Sure.
I never told them that we don't pay ransom, because I felt that that was the end of it. Actually, what happened after a couple of years, the main commanding general of the guerrilla organization sent word to have me executed, but those that were with me wouldn't do it, and this family found out, and that's why they got me out of it. So by the grace of God, I am still here.
Were there any other people kidnapped along with you, or as far as you know, were you alone at that time?
No, I was alone. I'm glad there was nobody else with me. Otherwise, I would have had to translate for them or take care of them or something. Actually, that day that I went into town, I had invited my wife to go with me. But she said, well, we're going to have a supper tonight with the whole group, and I need to prepare a meal. So she didn't go, and it's a good thing she didn't go.
Yes.
The physical part of that was very challenging.
How quickly were you reunited with your family when you were released?
the day that it was about the 16th or 17th of June, and they got a message in the afternoon to get me ready to go. I wasn't sure they were telling the truth because they'd kind of gotten up my hopes about that. But anyway, it happened to be the truth. And it rained, heavy rain. So we had to wait till about 10:30 at night. And I walked down to the river with them, crossed the river. And one of the main commanders was there. John was his name. And he was the one that my friend had negotiated with. So we went with him until about 2 o'clock in the morning in a vehicle. And then I got out and walked until 4 or 5 in the morning with several of them. And about 6 o'clock in the morning, we heard motorcycles coming and they said, get off and hide. So I went off and got down in the brush, and they said, we can still see you. Uh-huh. So I got down farther, and pretty soon they said, come out here, and I came out, and that was the brother that I mentioned to you that was there with the motorcycle and another fellow, and I got on and went with him. Traveled by motorcycle and truck and came to a farm that his family owned. First time I could lay on a bed in 2 years. Mm. And they handed me a phone, and I talked to my wife on the telephone, first time since March 31st, 1994, after 810 days. And then I was flown to Bogota later that day, and I spent one night, I think, in Bogota. And then we were reunited in Charlotte, North Carolina, with my wife and my two sons.
In 1996, as you said. Well, my guest, Mr. Ray Rising, for many years, a missionary with Wycliffe Bible Translators in Colombia, he's been describing to us his being kidnapped in 1994 by communist guerrillas there and released 810 days later. Ray, I know there's so much more to this story, but my understanding is that sometime later you were able to meet with some of your captors. Is that right? And if so, tell us how that came about and what you talked about.
I had made friends with one of the guerrillas. His nickname was Jimmy. About a year after I was released, I found out that Jimmy had gotten out of the guerrilla organization. So I sent some other ex-guerrillas and brought him up to Bogota. And Jimmy and I had a great time conversing. He had a young son that we helped several years with uniforms for school. Jimmy, later on, when he was traveling through Bogota, he spent a night with us, and he had a Bible, and I noticed he had several outlined and highlighted several times in his Bible. Also in 2008, we were living in Bogota. I received a phone call about noon, and it was from a Colombian friend that worked with me in security. He said, turn on the TV. They just captured Martin Sombra. So I turned it on, and there he was, Martin Sombra, standing between the Colombian National Police. And then I began to think, well, how can I get a copy of my book to him and a Bible? So I asked several people, and nobody seemed to have any answers. And then there was a young man that worked with me in media. He said, oh, my sister works in the prison. So I sent a copy of my book and the Bible to him. And inside my book, I put the phone number. He actually had a cell phone in prison. And so he called the house after we left the country, and a friend of mine answered, sent me an email and said, Ray, this is really exciting. This guy has come to the Lord. He's meeting with the other inmates in the prison, and he wants to talk to you. Hmm. So I called him, and we connected, and he arranged it. And I think it was 2012. I went into the prison with a lot of security in place. They asked me a lot of questions in order to get in there. I was in his cell with him for about 2 hours, and we talked and read the scriptures together. Now, who was Martin Sombra?
Yes.
He was the one that ordered my kidnapping. People in the administration and the jail that knew Francisco's sister said, we never heard of anything like that. You know, God's timing.
Yes.
1996 to 2012, that's how many years, and he wanted to talk to me.
And the book that you referred to, Guerrilla Hostage, where you tell this story, is that book still available if people want to get it?
It's available. It's used on Amazon. It's out of print. They do, once in a while, they do have some.
In terms of going to an area that might be considered dangerous, how much should that be a part of consideration of praying? And if somebody feels called to a particular country and they realize, well, there's danger here. There's a danger to my personal safety. You've been through that. You ministered in Colombia for many years. How do people that are thinking of going onto the mission field in such a country, how do you recommend they consider that, pray about that?
A lot of it has to do with the sending agency, too. Our SIL has policies to manage crisis, which includes training for all the staff. All mission agencies should have policies and training for their staff before sending them into potentially dangerous situations. You know, I try to follow instructions the best I could. And of course, a lot of things have happened since my kidnapping to make this come about. It's an extremely dangerous and situation that requires a lot of prayer. A lot of people prayed for me. Even the children of families, when at prayer time, they reminded their parents to pray for me. God answers prayer. And one way or another, you know, we just don't know the mind of the Lord and what he has in mind.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, longtime Wycliffe missionary Ray Rising. His story of being kidnapped as a missionary in Colombia is told in his book, Guerrilla Hostage. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Kirsten Burkett on using Christian journaling for spiritual growth.
So just practically speaking, there's a lot of use in writing down your reflections and using them to think through a godly approach to your reflections, and then using them later as you reflect further on your own growth towards God.
That's tomorrow at this same time right here on His People. Thanks for listening.